Well, let's see where we're up to. If you turn to Daf Lamed Beis Amud Beis, count down about 10 lines. Shalom Aleichem, Jeff. Long time no see. How you been?
Yeah,
bro. Okay, good. So as usual, what the Gemara does is it quotes that part of the Mishnah that we want to focus our attention on. Which part of the Mishnah is that? Is there an extra Gemara floating around? If not, I'll give you mine.
Sure.
Yeah, take mine. I know it all by heart, so. And save one seat for Harvey if you can. Today's Monday, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're hoping that Harvey will come. Moshe, how are you? Actually, you know what? I made a mistake. Harvey comes much later on. Yeah, for the second sheet. So, Brian, you take this seat, yeah? So, today's discussion will focus on the shear of the four minim. What is the minimum size? And the Mishnah says that back on Chavtes Amid Beis that lulav sheyesh bo shlosha tfachim kidei l'naneh bo kosher. So the minimum size of a lulav is 3 tfachim. Now, in order to know what a tefach is, to multiply it by 3, you have to know that there are 6 tfachim and an amma. And if you require 3 tefachim for lulav, then you're talking about half an amma. Okay, so we're on Lamed Beis, Amud Beis. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Rav Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, Shir Hadas Varava Shlosha. As the Mishnah only mentions the shear of a lulav. And the Mishnah identifies the shear of a lulav as what? 3 tefachim. Now Shmuel is saying that the shear of hadasim and aravos is 3 tefachim. Now we know that the lulav has to be taller than the hadasim the aravos. We could say that the lulav towers over the hadasim and the aravos. Therefore, Shmuel says, if the shear of Hadassim and Aravos is 3 tvachim, the lulav arba, the lulav will extend above the 3 tvachim of the Hadassim and the Aravos by 1 extra tefach. So therefore, the shear of the lulav is clearly 4 tvachim, not the way the Mishnah has it, 3 tvachim. Now Shmuel emphasizes, why is it that we need that extra tefach? Who says that the lulav has to be taller than the hadasim and the aravos? And the answer is, k'dei sheyehe lulav yotzei min hadas tefach. That the lulav should go beyond the hadas by 1 tefach. So therefore, if the hadas is 3 tefachim, the lulav, to the extent that he has to extend by 1 extra tefach, it's going to be how many tefachim? 4 tefachim. So that's going to be the shear of a lulav according to Shmuel. And it's interesting that the Mishnah says 3 tefachim and the Gemara in the name of Shmuel says 4 tefachim. So I didn't discover a new idea here. The Gemara itself is going to be up in arms here. How could Shmuel say something that's against the Mishnah? But before we get to that, the Gemara quotes another opinion, a different opinion. And this is Rabbi Parnach, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Parnach in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that Shidro Shalulav Tzarech Sheyetzim and Adas Tefach. It's not enough that the lulav itself, from bottom to top, is 4 tefachim. No. You measure from the bottom of the lulav, again, on bottom, I mean if you stand it up vertically, you're measuring from the bottom of the lulav to the top of the Shidra. You remember that the spine of the lulav reaches a certain point in the lulav, after which it branches up in the left and the right with olim, with the leaves of the lulav. And according to Rabbi Yochanan, the way we're quoting Rabbi Yochanan, it's not enough to have 4 tefachim in the lulav. The lulav might have to be actually much taller than 4 tefachim. the Shidra itself has to be 4 Tefachim. So does everybody see the machlokas here, just without even getting into deeper insights here, just on a simple level, on what we call pshat, you know, the difference between between Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan is a significant difference, because according to Shmuel, the entire lulav, including all its olim on top that go beyond the shidra, above the height of the shidra, the termination point of the shidra, is for tefachim. According to Rabbi Yochanan, on the other hand, the point which has to be 4 tefachim high, if you're counting from the bottom of the lulav, is the top of the shidra. You cannot integrate, according to Rabbi Yochanan, the olim into the shir of 4 tefachim. The shidra itself, on a deeper level, how does Rabbi Yochanan, when you talk about the shir of an object that's designated for a mitzvah, so you have to define that object. So how does Rabbi Yochanan define the object? What is a lulav? The shidra. The shidra itself is what we call the gufo shel lulav, according to Rabbi Yochanan. The olive is a very nice auxiliary. You know, it's an extension, it embellishes. Again, the various halachic dinim that apply to the, you know, to the olim, but that's only midin hadar. You know, we want a beautiful lulav. But as far as what the essence of a lulav is Rabbi Yochanan identifies the essence of the lulav with the shidra, and in the shir, the minimum size has to be identified with the essence of the lulav. If the essence, you know, there's a law of transmutation. You know, if the premise is that every shir has to reflect the essence of the object, and if the lulav essentially is the shidra, then the shir of 4 tefachim has to be in the shidra itself. So the shidra starts from the bottom, goes all the way on top. At some point, it branches off into anofim, and that's a very nice extension of the lulav, but that's not the essential kishkis of the lulav, if you call it that. The kishkis of the lulav is the shidra. So it comes out like this. If, let's say, from the bottom of the lulav going up on top, we get to the shidra at 3.9 tefachim, and then we have another bunch of tefachim in the olim, according to Shmuel, that's fine, because you have more than 4 tefachim in this lulav. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, since you only reached 3.9 tefachim when you got to the end of the shidra, that lulav is possible. And the Rishonim all go to town here that, according to Rabbi Yochanan, this is a Doraisa requirement. This is not some sort of rabbinic addition, which means that on a Doraisa level, you don't fulfill the mitzvah of Dalad Minim unless your lulav reaches the level, the height of 4 tefachim, at the end of the Shidra, before the end of the Shidra, or synchronizing it with the end of the Shidra. So the Gemara says that the Shidra Shalulav, according to Rabbi Yochanan, has to go above the Hadassim by 1 tefach. So the size of the Hadassim is 3 tefachim. The Shidra itself, according to Rabbi Yochanan, has to go 1 tefach above and beyond the height, the tippy height of the Hadassim, and therefore the Shidra Shalulav has to be 4 tefachim. The Shidra Shalulav has to be 4 tefachim. That's the sheet of whom? Of Rabbi Yochanan. Did everybody have that? Okay. Now, what we have to study now is the Mishnah, because the Mishnah says that the shir of a lulav is what?
Three. Is
3 tefachim. Tanan, right away the Gemara quotes our Mishnah. You know, it's not that long ago since we learned the Mishnah. We can quote the Mishnah. Lulav sheyesh bo gimel tefachim, kidei lananea bo, which means it has enough for nanuim, you can shake the lulav, is kasher. So what's going on over here? Now this kasher is a kasha according to both Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan. Neither of the two opinions will be saved or spared of this kasha, because they both agree that the shear of the lulav is 4 tefachim, not 3 tefachim, as it says in the Mishnah. Question is, what is that? What compromise? You know, does the entire lulav compromise the 4 tefachim, or you can only integrate up to the end of the shidra? But both Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan agree, without a debate, that the shear of a lulav is 4 tefachim. What are we going to do with the Mishnah? So here's a rare move in the Gemara. The Gemara doesn't usually, you know, but I guess the Gemara is really desperate at this point. And the Gemara says, Ema means, this is how you have to read the Mishnah. And many of the Rishonim say that the Gemara is actually changing the version, the text of the Mishnah, the gears of the Mishnah. And he says, "Ukidei l'nanea bo kosher." Now go back to the Mishnah and ask yourself the question, what did the Gemara just add? I have in my Mishnah, and I assume you have in your Mishnah, "Kidei l'nanea bo kosher." So what was this Ema? What is the Gemara adding here in order to defend Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan that the Shear of Lulav is actually four Tvachin? Does anybody see it? Don't all answer at once. I mean, yeah, I can't hear so many voices. What is Gemara Ema? What's the letter after the word Ema? Vav, the Vav. We don't have the Vav in that Mishnah. The Gemara is suggesting that we add the Vav. The Vav is telling you that the shear of the lulav Enochinami is three tefachim, but you also need another shear of the lulav. There's something above the three tefachim that's required, and that's kedei l'nanebo. Ooh, kedei l'nanebo. In addition to the three tefachim, you also need another piece of the lulav to go above the three tefachim for the purpose of nanuim. How much of a length or a height, if you want to call it, do we require to get that extra kedei l'nanea? One tefach. So we have three tefachim and one tefach. The obvious question is, why did the Mishnah complicate matters? Why didn't the Mishnah just say that the shear of the lulav is four tefachim? I mean, that would have made life a lot more simple. Why say the shear of the lulav is three tefachim and in order to do nanuim, i.e. you're going to need another tefach? You know, that's like 3 + 1 = 4. Why not just start with the number 4? So I just want to tell you something I heard from my Rebbe like a zillion years ago. And again, I apologize that you're going to hear sometimes these little beeps, and that's because I'm Skyping from this phone for someone who Yehuda's joining the Shia. So I don't know how to, if somebody knows how to put it on silent so we won't be disturbed by that. I haven't figured out that technology yet. But anyway, so I heard from my Rebbe many, many moons ago the following. He says that the basic Shia, the lulav, is three tefachim. Why do you need the fourth tefach? And the answer is because you recall, Rabosa, when we spoke about the case of Nifritzu, when we spoke about cases that need kafus, that need to be, you know, where the olim have to be flat up against the shidra, has to be davuk, as we said. And what happens in the case of Nifridu, where the olim are hanging, but they're still attached? So if you recall, Rabbi Yehuda says you have to bind them together to get kafus. The Chacham don't require that. But yet we saw over and over again that the Rabbanan have the drasha that kapos, tomorrow, means kafus. So how did we explain it? We used a term from philosophy. Who remembers? Why don't the Rabbanan require that you bind it and the lulav is kosher without binding? Who remembers that one word? Starts with a P?
Potential,
exactly. That the Chachamim put all the emphasis on potential. So my Rebbe said the following. How does the Gemara know that Nanuim should determine that extra Tefach, should generate the requirement of the extra Tefach? After all, the Gemara says later on, a very, very famous Gemara, that mida agbe nafikbe, which means once you lift up the four minim, just simply lift it off the table, yatza, you fulfill your mitzvah. The Torah just says, ukachdem luchem. Nowhere does the Torah say you have to shake the lulav. And we derive the mitzvah of nanuim as a separate mitzvah based on the pasuk atzei hayar yiranenu ka, that somehow the atzei ayar, you know, the trees, so to speak, when they shake in the wind, they're singing praise to God. So the lulav is now viewed as atzei ayar, and based on this drasha, Chazal say that you have to shake the lulav. But yet, let's say if I picked up the Dalet Minim and I did not shake the lulav without Nanuim, was I Yotze or not? The Gemara says, the very moment you lifted it up, you were Yotze the mitzvah. So in a sense, the mitzvah of Nanuim is an enhancement of the mitzvah of Ulekachtem Lachem. So there's the basic Lekicha, and then there's an enhancement of the mitzvah. And the Gemara says the following, that although the shear of the lulav really should reflect the basic mitzvah, and primarily once you lift up the lulav, even without nanuim yotzei, then the shear of the lulav should be what?
Three.
But I still need a fourth tefach. Why? Again, the word that starts with a P?
Potential.
I have to have the lulav has to have the potential of fulfilling the entire mitzvah. The embellished mitzvah. And what's the embellished mitzvah, the ideal mitzvah? Not just lifting up, but also what?
Nanuim.
And since the perfect mitzvah is Nanuim, the object has to reflect, at least touch the potential for that perfect mitzvah. And that's why we need the fourth tefah. So it's conceptually, the Mishnah is very meduyak. Because the Mishnah tells you that the Shia, the Lulav, as far as the Maisa mitzvah is concerned, is really three tefachim. Because that's enough to constitute a lulav for the agbe nafik be for the lekicha, but we need a fourth tefach so that the lulav will have the potential of nanuim. And even though nanuim is not likuv, it's not critical. You can fulfill your mitzvah without nanuim, but nevertheless, the object of the mitzvah has to be defined by nanuim.
Why can't you do nanuim with three?
Because the nanuim have to go above the other minim. It has to be what we call nikar. Nikar means that someone from the outside could see that the lulav, which is called atzei ayar, yiranenu ka, you know, is shaking around. So if the lulav is at the same height or even lower than the hadas and the aravos, then when you do the nanuim, there's no heker. So whenever you have a halach of heker, we always require at least a tefach. A tefach is the shear, the minimum shear for a heker. Heker means that it should be obvious to the onlooker. Okay, now the Gemara asks a kasha on Rabbi Yochanan. Toshma, maybe we could determine whether Reish Lakish or Rabbi Yochanan, which one is correct, based on this price. It says, Shir Hadas Varava Shlosha Velulav Arba. Now, what does it say requires four? It says the Lulav requires four. It doesn't say that what? The Shidra has to be four. My love, Lechora, the simple way, this is again that rhetorical my love that we say, Bahade Adah Olive, including the leaves. In other words, the Lulav, you know, when you talk to a person about Lulav, you don't mean just the Shidra. That's called the Shidra, that's the spine. When you use the word Lulav, the term Lulav reflects the entire Lulav, including the Olive that go above the Shidra. And yet, the Brisa clearly says that all you need is Arba Tfachim. So Gemara answers, lo. Rabbi Yochanan is going to say that what does the Brisa mean? It means levad mi olam. Because again, what does the word lulav mean according to Rabbi Yochanan?
Shidra.
The kishkas, the essence of a lulav, is the shidra. Gufa. Now this word gufa is a very problematic word, but we don't want to spend too much time on this because generally speaking, gufa means, I'm going to quote to you a source that we had earlier. And we really never had this source. What we're about to see is what's called a brisa, a tosefta. And the Gemara never quoted this tosefta. So the word gufa is a little bit strange. The only justification you could come up with is that the word gufa here refers to the first line in the brisa. Because that first line in the brisa we did have. Not in the brisa, but we had it in Shmuel. So Shmuel is in Amora, that's way after the brisa. But Shmuel had already told us, if you recall, that Shir Adas Varova Shlosha Velulav Arba. So that's basically a quote from Shmuel. So that's why the Gemara uses the term Gufa. But this actual quote of Shir Hadas Varova Shlosha Velulav Arba comes way before Shmuel historically, because it's a brisa back at the time of the Tanoim. And now the Brisa quotes a second opinion. Who's the second opinion? Rabbi Tarfon. Now just on the side, Rabosa, you may think that when a Brisa quotes an anonymous opinion, which usually reflects the Chachamim, right, the general Chachamim, and then it quotes a single opinion, a minority view, that we apply the principle of Yachid v'Rab Malach k'Rab, we paskin like the majority. Majority rules. But Rabbi Tarfon fits into an exceptional category. Rabbi Tarfon was the Gadol Hador. He was single-handedly in charge of the Mesoras HaTorah. And we're going to see as the sugya develops that we have to spend a lot of time trying to figure out Rabbi Tarfon's shear of the Dalet Minim, because we actually accept Rabbi Tarfon lahalacha. So what does Rabbi Tarfon say? So Rabosa, I haven't been able to find this magic marker, which would really help me. So if somebody could just, you know, write this down. Okay? Let's take an Amma. Aleph Mem He. Okay? If you have a piece of paper, just write the word Amma down. Amma equals how many tefachim? A tefach is Tet Pei Chet. Okay? Don, are you able to write this down? Because usually I would write this on the board.
I can get one, I think.
But here, I'll write it for you. I don't want to waste any time, Don. You're going to miss the shiur. Here, watch. Okay. There's something called an amma. I think in English, what do they call an amma? A cubit or something? I don't know, a cubit. And then there's something called a tefach. Now, what you have to know is that an amma equals 6 tefachim. And a tefach is obviously 1/6 of an am, okay? Okay, now, it gets complicated. Why? Because this chart that I just gave you, that the ratio between an amma and a tefach is 6-1, that's only what's called an amma benonis. Okay? Now, the word benonis literally means average, but what it really means in our context is classical. In other words, whenever you hear the word amma anywhere in Shas, unless you hear otherwise, you're talking about an amma benonis, which means it's made up of 6 tefachim. However, in rare cases, we have something called an amma ktana. What does the word ktana mean? Small. A small amma. The small amma is made up of only 5 tefachim. So if you can make a note of it, the amma ktana, which is going to be the subject of Rabbi Tarfon, is made up of 5 tefachim. Now, which is larger? You don't have to do the math now. Just give me a simple answer without doing all the fractions and so forth. Which is larger? Half of an amma benonis or an amma ktana? Well, what did I ask you? Which one is?
Which is larger?
Which is larger? Which one is larger? Oh, an amma ktana. An amma ktana, although it's only 5 tefachim, which makes it a smaller amma, it still is much, much taller, significantly larger than what we call 3 tefachim benonim, meaning half of a regular classical amma. And Rabbi Tarfon is quoted as saying, the amma bas chamisha tefachim, that when we say that the hadas has to be a certain minimum shear, we identified it and converted it into tefachim, and we multiplied the tefach by 3 to get 3 tefachim for the shear of the hadas. According to Rabbi Tarfon, no. The shear of hadas is an amma, not the larger amma, which is, let's say, 1/6 larger than an amma ktana, but an amma nevertheless, an amma that's made up of 5 tefachim, right, which is 5/6 of an amma. That's a lot longer and larger than 3 tefachim, which is only half an amma. Amar Rava, Rava gets very upset. This is one of those extreme, you know, exclamations. Sharolei Mara Rabbi Tarfon, he lifts his eyes up to heaven with a prayer that God, Mara means the master of Rabbi Tarfon, master with a capital M, meaning the master of the universe, Sharolei, should forgive him. God should forgive Rabbi Tarfon for making such a statement. Now keep in mind, Rabbi Osai, you're talking about the Gadol Hador, Rabbi Tarfon, and Rav is a good couple of generations later. Rav is not even a first generation Amora. But Rav says God has to forgive him. He made a real mistake over here. The Brisa and all the sources that we have, the Tanakhama of Rabbi Tarfon, they all agree that the shear of a hadas is 3 tefachim.
Rabbi, can the Rabbi just explain again how Rabbi Tarfon got that idea to begin with? I mean, if the mission is clear in talking about tefachim, why did
right? Why did right. So all this is a hava bina, meaning for some reason Rabbi Tarfon thought that the Mesorah, you know, the tradition about the shear of the hadasim was an amma. And we're going to see that the Gemara is going to quit very quickly. Hadasim and the Arovos, and then we're going to have to add another tefach in order to have an amma plus a tefach for the lulav. The Gemara is going to quickly, rescind this position. But what I just wanted to dramatize is why Rava said this can't be. You know, it can't be that Rabbi Tarfon is going to convert the shear of a hadas into an amma. Why is that impossible? He says the following. Hashta now, the Torah describes the hadas as anaf eitz avos. Now, let's just spend a minute on the word avos. Almost means when you have things that lie one on top of the other in such a way that they hide anything below them. And in the case of Hadassim, the leaves on the Anaf, the Anaf is the branch of the Hadass, the leaves themselves, the Olim, have to be Ovos. They have to be overlap. Such a way that...
Overlap.
Excellent. They have to overlap. And Rava says the following. Hashta now, Ovos, Shlosha, to find three Tfachim of straight Ovos, meaning get yourself a branch of Hadass, that's three tefachim long and is avos. Avos means that it all overlaps. He says, lo mishkachinon. The word mishkachinon is a conjugated word. The word shchiach. Shchiach means it's common. It's found. It's, you know, it's an easy find. Lo mishkachinon means it's very hard to find the hadas. That's avos. And then the mefarshim added another complication in hadas. Why is hadas extremely complicated? Because there's a psul, a disqualification, we'll get to it a little later, not today, called Hadas Shota, which means that out of each point in the Anaf, you've got to have one Nakuda, one point from which three leaves come out of that exact point. So not only does it have to be Avos, it also can't be a Hadas Shota. In a word, the requirements of the Hadas are very stiff, very difficult to find. And therefore, now you're going to take the Hadas, which, you know, you don't add insult to injury. You know, let's do damage control. It's bad enough that you tell me that Hadas requires three Tfachim, which is half of an Amma. And that's difficult enough of a challenge. Now you're telling me that Hadas is an Amma. Again, albeit an Amma Ketana, a smaller Amma, but it's nevertheless 5/6 of an Amma. That's a humongous thing. And now, the longer the Hadas... You know, some people like to buy long hadas. It's not always a good idea to buy long hadas, because the longer the hadas, the more complicated it is to find a kosher hadas. Because again, as you extend beyond a small amount, you have more of a chance, the statistical probability of getting something that's not avos or it's hadas shota, then more psulim that will apply. So now by doubling the size of the hadas, you are making it virtually impossible, says Rava to Rabbi Tarfon. Again, they didn't live in the same generation, to find the hadas kosher. And we hold that four minimum akvim, says, so it's four or bust. You're basically going to undermine the whole mitzvah of lekachtem lechem. So this was the situation until a rabbi by the name of Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. And he had a new interpretation of Rabbi Tarfon. It couldn't be that Rabbi Tarfon required a full Amma for the size of an Adas. Ki also Rav Dimi Omar, Amma bashisha tfachim, aseosa bas chamisha. What he means to say is the following. That, and the key words here are the last four words, if you want to underline those. Aseosa bas chamisha. What he's saying is, start with a regular classical amma. That's called an amma beinonis. In the language of Rav Dimi, that's called an amma bas shisha tfachim. As we said at the outset, your classical amma is comprised of six tfachim. So you have now your classical amma. However, he says, divide up the amma into five tfachim. Instead of six tfachim, divide it up into five tefachim. What are you going to get as a result? A larger tefach. That's called a tefach gadol. Again, if I had a blackboard, I would write it. A tefach gadol. So again, we're not changing the size of the amma. We're dealing with the classical size of the amma. But rather, we're changing the size of the tefach. Oh, now, if you have one, now a classical amma has how many tefachim?
Six.
Now you're dividing up into five. So what's going to happen is that your tefach will have a ratio of, or shall we say it the other way around? The ratio between the classical tefach and the tefach katan is going to be 6 to 5, which means 1 1/5. Or 1.20%, 120%. So it means that now, what you're adding to each one of the tefachim is simply 1/5 of a tefach. That's almost minuscule. So instead of having 3 tefachim, according to Rabbi Tarfon, we're going to require 3 3/5 tefachim. that already is not going to be a big problem, meaning that Rava is not willing to, you know, to sit Shiva Chas V'Sholom over the fact that Rabbi Tarfon almost doubled the size of the required size of Hadas. Admittedly, he added 3/5 of a Tefach, because again, what he's doing is he's taking a classical Amma and he's dividing it into 5 Tefachim, which means that the Tefach, 3 of which are required to require the minimum shear of an arava, that tefach is a tefach gadol, right? It's instead of dividing into 6, the dividing the arava into 6 tefachim, he divides it into 5 tefachim, and therefore each tefach becomes 1/6 larger than your classical tefach. So you have the tefach, haragil, you know, the regular tefach. You call it tefach benoni. Benoni means the general classical tefach. And now we have something called a tefach katan. Now we have something called a tefach gadol, I meant to say. And a tefach gadol now is going to be 1/6 larger than a tefach benoni. So he's adding 1/6 of a tefach, multiply that by 3, and you get 1/6 and another 6th and another 6th is 20 is 1/6 is 20%, correct?
1/5,
I meant to say 1/5. Did I say 1/6? Yeah, I'm sorry. It's 1/5, right? Because again, he's adding a fifth by breaking down the Amma into 5 tefachim, correct? So the each tefach now becomes 1/5 larger than the tefach, which is 1/6 of an Amma. So if you have 1/5 and you multiply by 3, you get 3/5. So now the Arava requires and the Adas requires 3 tefachim, meaning classical tefachim, plus 3/5 of a tefach. So that's what the Gemara says. Same am shlosha la'adas. If you take this tefach gadol, which is 1/5 of a classical tefach, and now you calculate 3 of those tefachim for adas, v'ashar lulav, and then another tefach, a 4th tefach for the lulav, is kama haviluhu. How many tefachim will you have at the end? Tlasa, 3. U, tlasa chumshi. 3 3/5. So we have 3 3/5. And that's not such a significant chumra as to get a rava all, you know, ruffle his feathers and say, how can you expect us to get an arava, or a more precise hadas that is 3 tefachim? Now you're saying it's 3 3/5 of a tefach. That's not such a significant extension or requirement to get rava all upset. So the Gemara says now, Kasha de Shmuel ad de Shmuel. Why? We have a contradiction between two statements of Shmuel. One statement of Shmuel we're familiar with. Hacha here in Masechta Sukkah, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel Shir Hadas Varava Shlosha. Now, as soon as you say Shlosha, you mean Shlosha Tefachim. And as soon as you say Shlosha Tefachim, you mean, unless you qualify it, what kind of Tefachim? Beinanim, right? Shlosha Tefachim Beinanim. But Vehasam, but there in Masechta Nida, Amar Avud Amar Shmuel is another quote of Shmuel, the same Shmuel, Halacha Kerevi Tarfon. In other words, that we require what's called a Tefach Gadol, and the Shiurim of the Torah require Tefach Gadol. The main sugi of Shiurim in the Torah is in Masechta Nida, and there Rabbi Tarfon establishes that the shear of a tefach is a tefach gadol, which is 1/5 of an amma, because you break up the amma into 5 parts, not into 6 parts, and hence you have a tefach gadol, which is one and one fifth of a tefach benani. So now, how could Shmuel on the one hand say that the arava is 3 tefachim benanim, and at the same time say that we paskin like Rabbi Tarfon, because Rabbi Tarfon requires not 3 tefachim benanim, but rather 3 tefachim gedolim, and a tefach gadol is 1/5 larger than a tefach benoni? So what happened to the 3/5 that we're going to require here in the case of Hadas? How could Shmuel mislead us and simply say that the shear of Hadas is shlosha tefachim when it really is 3 3/5 tefachim? So the Gemara says lo dak. Now this principle lo dak means that sometimes we round it off. In this case, there's a little bit more of a push towards lo dak, meaning rounding it off, because we're dealing with tefachim, and since we haven't yet reached the fourth tefach, and especially according to Rabbi Tarfon, who gauges tefachim by what we call a tefach gadol, which is one and a fifth compared to a tefach benoni. So therefore, Rabbi Tarfon didn't have to get too specific. Lo dok means he didn't have to be so meticulous. He can give you a more of a general number. Like the Gemara, for example, it's actually also Masechta Sukkah discusses the circumference of a sukkah, which has to do with pi, and the Gemara rounds it off. You know, it's 3 1/3 instead of going into an irrational number. So sometimes we have a principle called lo dok. So Gemara says, no, that can't be. Why? Amar, when do we say the Amrin lo dok? When can we activate the principle lo dok and tell you he rounded it off? That's only l'chumra. Like, for example, if I were to tell you that something that's 39 is 40, so, you know, yesh b'chlal included in 40 is 39, so I'm just being machmer, you don't lose anything, there's no tragedy of being machmer. So if I want to round it off l'chumra, there's no great loss over here. However, l'kula mi amrina lo dok? This is a rhetorical question. Do we say lo dok in a case of l'kula, as people are going to walk out of here thinking, based on Shmuel's declaration of 3 tefachim, that all you need is 3 tefachim beinanim, when in fact that hadas, that 3 tefachim beinanim, is possible because Shmuel accepts the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon, who requires not tefachim beinanim, but tefachim gdolim. Each tefach is 1/5 larger than a tefach beinani, and the sum total is going to be 3/5 larger than what's called 3 tefachim beinanim. How could he give me a room for such an error that would be lakula? In other words, the jeopardy he's opening us to the following danger. We might think complacently that we fulfilled our obligation to Dalet Minim, when in fact we didn't fulfill it at all, because the truth of the matter is that hadas is too small. It's small by 3/5 of a tefach. So now we're in real big trouble. Now there were two great giants who came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. They were the travelers, but not only did they travel, that doesn't interest me so much, but what they carried with them was the Mesorah, the tradition of Eretz Yisrael. And that's very important because the Tanoim lived in Eretz Yisrael. So if you have an issue about how to interpret the statement of a Tana, you really want to, again, you don't have any fax machines and you don't have Skype, you can't get on the phone and call up Eretz Yisrael and get the final word. What did Rabbi Tarfon mean when he said Ava Bas Chamisha Tfachim? So you wait for a traveler, but it's not just Tama travel, has his his knapsack over his back. You need a giant in the tradition, in what we call Chachmei HaMesorah. So there were two primary Chachmei HaMesorah at that time, who used to come often from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. One was Rav Dimi, that we just met, and now we're meeting up with Ravin. Unfortunately, Rav Dimi and Ravin were of different traditions in Eretz Yisrael, so they brought from Eretz Yisrael very often different versions of the same Allah. And in this case, where we've been assuming until now, based on the tradition and the transmission, I would say, of Rav Dimi, that Rabbi Tarfon is a chumra, and less than the extra 3/5 of a tefach is not going to suffice for the mitzvah of hadasim, because you need to be meshayev a tefach gadol. Comes along Rav Dimi, and he has a different tradition, which he brings from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. And according to his tradition, Rabbi Tarfon has a smaller shear of hadasim that's less than 3 tefach. How is that so? Ki also Ravin Omar Amo Bas Chamisha Tfachim Aseo Sa Shisha. In other words, the Amo itself is measured by 5 Tfachim. That gives you what's called an Amo Ktana, if you remember the what I wrote on your page. So that's a smaller Amo. But he says the Tefach is 1/6 of an Amo. Now this is fascinating. What Ravin is doing is he's changing the shear of the Amma while maintaining the ratio between the Tefach and the Amma. So what's the ratio between the Tefach and an Amma? 1/6. And what's the size of an Amma? Usually we understand that an Amma Beinonis is going to be 6 Tefachim, but Rabbi Tarfon is operating with an Amah Ketana. So the Amah Ketana is made up of only 5 Tefachim. So it's already a smaller Amah. But he's not willing to change the ratio between the Tefach and the Amah. So the Tefach remains the same in terms of a ratio, and it's now 1/6 of an Amah Ketana. He's going to now lower and diminish the shear of 3 Tefachim. The Gemara is going to calculate the mathematics now to see exactly how much he subtracts over here. So again, let's just read the words, because that's what's critical to me. Amah bas chamisha tefachim. You're going to take a smaller amah. It only has 5 tefachim, so it's 1/6 smaller than an amah beinonis, and you're going to still divide it up into 6 parts. So if you take the amah that's made up of 5 tefachim and divide it up into 6 parts, then each tefach is going to be what's called a tefach katan. Is tzemeim shloshal adas, you need 3 tefachim for adas, but again we're talking about tefachim ketanim, a smaller tefach, v'ashar luluv, and a 4th tefach for the luluv, also again, that 4th tefach is going to be a smaller tefach, it's going to be a tefach katan, but again in the ratio between the luluv and the hadasim of 4 to 3 tefachim, meaning that one extra tefach still remains relative to the size of the now smaller adas, the same extra tefach, meaning it's a quarter larger or taller than the tefach, is kamahavi luhu, what's going to be the minimum size of the hadasim and the aros, according to Rabbi Tarfon, tre upalga. Now, here's what I think is the calculation. It's half of a 5 tefach amah is going to be 1/3 of tre upalga. So when you multiply it by 3, you'll get tre upalga. Tre upalga means 2.5. So 2.5 tefachim instead of 3 tefachim. So Rabbi Tarfon is reducing the size, the minimum shear of a tefach, of a hadas by a half a tefach. Because if you take a 5 tefach amah and divide it by 6, each tefach is now basically, well, let's see, if you take 1/6, it would be 15 over 18. No, it's 15, 18.
15 over 6.
Yeah, well, I was going to take 15 over 18 and multiply it by 3. Is that the same as yours? I think. It's just that yours is a lot simpler. So in any event, what happens is now that the shear of the Arava and Hadas has been now cut down by a half of a Tefach. And now the Gemara goes on to say, but sof kasha the Shmuel was still left with the original problem, because Shmuel said that all you need is three Tefachim. I shouldn't say all you need. I should say you require 3 tefachim for a hadas. And then Shmuel made a statement that we passed like Rabbi Tarfon, which means that all we need is 2.5 tefachim for the hadas. So Gemara answers low dark that Shmuel was not medayik. He didn't tell you exactly the size. V'hainu l'chumra lo dak. Now he's telling you that you need 3 tefachim. So if you mistakenly take the 3 tefachim as 3 tefachim beinonim, then you'll get a larger shear than 3 tefachim ketanim. And hainu de lechumra lo dak. In other words, you would not be medayik if you end up with a chumra. So if I tell you need a larger arava than what you really need, a larger hadas, that's not tragic, because in any event, you'll certainly fulfill the mitzvah. I'm not jeopardizing the possibility. So if it's lakula, we don't apply the principle of lakula lo dak. But if it's lechumra, we can apply the principle of lechumra lo dak. The Omer Rav Huna, Omer Shmuel halacha ki Rabbi Tarfon. We paskin like Rabbi Tarfon. Now you get the impression that the final word of this sugya is that we paskin like Rabbi Tarfon. And I believe that we'll find this in Shulchan Aruch. And it means that the hadasim don't have to be the size of a classical tefach, 3 times a classical tefach, but rather a tefach katan. And certainly that's a kula that's significant, because again, we're not only dealing with the size of the anaf, or the branch of the hadas, but also within the branch itself, to see what percentage of the olim come from the same point, and what percentage of the olim overlap one on top of the other. So therefore we want to know that we can accept this shita of Rabbi Tarfon. So let's just quickly summarize. We have 3 different in the developing of the sugya, understandings of Rabbi Tarfon. The original understanding of Rabbi Tarfon is that Rabbi Tarfon requires a full amma for the shear of hadasim, although not the amma betanis, but rather the amma of five tefachim. But that's a very, very significant extension or chumrah in the shear of three tefachim. And Rava says, let God forgive him for saying such a thing. We can barely find hadasim of three tefachim. Now you're telling me it's an amma. So Gemara retracts this based on the tradition of Rav Dimi, and what Rabbi Tarfon is talking about is a slight addition, what we call a tefach gadol, which is 1/5 larger than a tefach beinoni, and you multiply that by three, and you get three tefachim plus 3/5 of a tefach, and that would calm down Rav. But now we have a more serious problem, because then when Shmuel said all you need is three tefachim, he's misleading us. And we might think that all you need is three tefachim beinonim, when Shmuel himself passes like Rabbi Tarfon, and according to Rav Dimi's tradition, Rabbi Tarfon requires a tefach gadol. So now people are going to come to assume that three tefachim of a tefach beinoni is enough for the kashrus of an arava, when that's not true. You need three tefachim plus another 3/5 of a tefach, meaning to get three tefachim gedolim. And now the Gemara substitutes the tradition of Rav Dimi with the tradition of Ravin, that on the contrary, Rabbi Tarfon was diminishing the requirement, the size of a hadas, and he significantly took off an amma, and he divided up into a smaller amma, divided up into six parts. Now three halves of a, or shall we say half of a five tefach amma is all that you need for the hadasim. And now when Shmuel makes a statement that you need three tefachim, that's called lodak lechumra, and therefore there's nothing terrible lost. And now, Rabosa, we start a new Mishnah. We've only learned one Mishnah so far. It took us a couple of weeks. Don't get frustrated. The first Mishnah in every parak is usually, not always, but usually longer than the other Mishnahs, because a lot of the groundbreaking work that we've already established in the first Mishnah will help us in the second Mishnah. The first Mishnah is the Mishnah of Lulav, and the second Mishnah, the one we're doing now, is the Mishnah of Hadas. And each one of the four Minim will get its own Mishnah, not just because we believe in equality and democracy and all that kind of stuff, but simply because the Dinim actually change. They're not identical in each of the four Minim. So each of the four Minim deserves its own Mishnah to convey to us the unique dimensions or requirements of that Min. And in the case of Hadas, we're going to see that there's a very, very unique requirement of Hadas, and that tells you that it has to be Avos, right? As we said, the Pasuk calls it Anaf Eitz Avos, and the requirements that are derived from Avos are very strict and very unique to the case of Hadas. That defines Hadas as a separate entity. Now, let me just mention one thing about Avos. You remember we spoke about the fact that the Anofim have to cover one over the other. As Michael said very well, they have to overlap, right? Now, what it means is the following. This is called, I'm just giving you a bit of an introduction, this is called Chofim. Again, if I had the way I would write on the... Chofim is a verb, the noun of which is Chafifa. And chafifa means to overlap. So we need, in the case of Hadas, because of the Pasuk Avos, we need enough of chofifim es eitzo. Eitzo means the eights. So every Hadas is made up of two elements. There's the eights, which we call the anaf, the branch. And then on top of it, I'm sorry, let me start again. There's the eitz, which is the branch itself, the naked branch, so to speak. And then there's the anofim, those are the leaves on top of the branch. And in the case of Hadas, we need that there be so many leaves that they absolutely cover that branch, the wood itself, the eitz. That's called anof of chofifim, they completely cover the eitz. So if you have a Hadas and you could see the eitz itself, and it's not covered, that's going to be a problem.
But that only is for that specific measurement of Hadas, because it's almost impossible to get Hadas where the whole Hadas is covered.
So that's going to be a major controversy. It could be that what you do is you mitzarif the top with the bottom, and you can get rove. And then, if you only have less than rove in the bottom, and the top is not... Eitz of, it's not enough of chofim, it's eitz of, then you have a problem. So we'll learn all this from Yirtzeh Hashem as we go along. I just wanted to tip you off that what the Gemara is going to try to do is find the other species that fit this description. Like, for example, I'm not an expert. Again, we need the help of the experts here. But it seems that the olive tree, the olive branch, has a heavy foliage of leaves, and the leaves actually cover the whole thing. So how are we going to know what exactly is a hadas? So first, let's go through the Mishnah. The Mishnah says hadas hagozel. Okay, this we could already have written the script ourselves. That if it's a stolen hadas, we had the whole sugya of avankari for those who were here at the beginning when we started learning. Make sure it's not a stolen hadas. Now, if it's stolen, then on the first day you have a problem because of what? Lachem. And on the rest of the days you have a problem of what? Misababa vera. Excellent. Then we have a yavesh. This is also possible. Now, exactly what yavesh is, so the Shulchan Aruch writes that yavesh means rov ola. That if most of the leaves on the hadas eitz are dried, that passels the hadas. But if you have a minority of the leaves that are dry and most of them are still moist, then it's kosher. But how dry is dry? And here we have a chiddush of the Ravid. Okay, I wasn't thinking about schnapps at that point, but the Ravid says that it's got to be white. That's considered dry. Now, we never found that in the lulav, that the lulav has to turn from green to white. We just spoke about the fact that the lulav has no moisture in it. Like last year's lulav, or the lulav that you bequeathed to your grandchildren, right? That's a dry lulav. And the Ravid says, and this is a gevaldig kula, by the way, la locha, if you want to rely on the Ravid, we'll see if we do, that hadas is only considered yavesh if A, as we said before, this is even before the Ravid, rov anofim are yavesh. And number two, it's not enough that rov all of our yavesh, but you also need achi albinu pneam. Yalbinu means viloshan lavan. It turns what? It turns white. Okay, there are a lot of Rishonim who reject this Ravid, and they think that if it's got no moisture, even if it still has a green color to it, and it's not white, it's still possible. Now, Pashtus here, what's the psul? So if you take a look in the Rishonim, they all say, with the exception of the Meiri, that the psul is hadar. That if it's not moist, and it, again, according to the Rav, it actually turned white, then it's lacking in hadar. However, the Meiri says that the reason why a hadas yavesh is posel is because it is so dry that if you put the leaf into your hand and just give it a little nick, it's going to absolutely crumble in your fingers, in your hands. And he says that's not considered a shear of hadas. You may recall, and we're going to have it again here in the next line in the Mishnah, the principle called kitusei mechta shiura, which means if you have something that is set to be destroyed, it's already considered as if it was destroyed, and it doesn't have a shear, it doesn't have the minimum size. And the Meiri wants to apply that same principle here to the case of a hadas yavesh, that if it got to the point of dryness where it would just crumble in your hands, then he says it's not considered an anaf at all, and it's kimandi eino dami, it's as if it doesn't exist. And if it doesn't exist, then it doesn't have a shear of three tefach. And then afkamina between the Meiri and Hadar, which all the other Rishonim say it's not Hadar, might be the balance of Yontif, meaning after the first day, anything that's possible been in Hadar, according to one school of thought, is kosher, but not something that has no shear. In other words, the shear and the size, the minimum size of a Hadas remains constant throughout the entire time. Then the Mishnah says, Shal Ashera Vishel Iranidachas. Okay, these are two forms of Avodah Zorah. Either we could assume that the Hadas was growing on a tree and that tree was worshipped. Usually Hadasim grow low on the ground, but it was worshipped as Avodah Zorah. And therefore it has to be burnt. Or in the case of Ir HaNidachas, where most of the Jews in that city, unfortunately, tragically, worshipped Avodah Zarah, you have to burn up the whole city, including the trees in the city. And in such a case, the Hadas is considered Omed L'Sreifa, it's designated to be burnt, and it's possible because of the principle of Kitusei Mechta Shi'ud. Niktam Rosho, again a concept that we're familiar with from the first Mishnah in the case of Lulav. If the head of the Hadas was broken off, which is called the Rosh Ha'anaf, okay, it's possible. Now, in the case of a Lulav, we had a long discussion, I don't know if you were here for that, maybe it was my second Shia, about what are we talking about, Niktam Rosho. Tosis of the opinion that it's on the top of the lulav. Rashi seems to leave out that requirement, and we just look at the olim. That whole discussion is irrelevant to hadas because hadas is made up of only one anaf, meaning the branch itself is only one. So the rosh anaf is called niktam rosho, and it's possible because it's not hadar. Nifritzu olav. If let's say the leaves on the hadas fall off. And the Rishonim point out it's rov. If rov of the olim fall off, there's going to be a major problem when we get to arovos, because it's very common in arovos. In hadasim, it's less common. But if most of the leaves on the hadas have fallen off, then posel, it's posel. That's called nifritzu olav. Now here, I just want to point out in passing that the Ritva insists that once most of the leaves of the hadas fall off, it's no longer a hadas. This is not a problem like a broken top. You know, a broken top, a headless hadas, HH we'll call it, the headless hadas, is a psul of hadar, another H, so we have HHH. And that would be kosher for the balance of yontif. But says the Ritva, in the case of nifritzu olav, where the most of the leaves have actually been detached from the branch, he says from the branch. So in such a case, he says it's not a hadas at all. A hadas by definition is a combination of the eitz and the anaf. I mean the anaf and the olav. I meant to say. And if the olim fell off, or most of them fell off, it's not a hadas, and therefore it wouldn't qualify even for the balance of yontif. The next part of the Mishnah introduces a concept called anavav. I would translate, you know, you can tell me what Art Scroll says, I would translate, without looking at Art Scroll, that anavav means berries. How does he translate it? Oh, Baruch Shekivanti. See, I could have gotten a job with Art Scroll. Just joking. Anyway, so now a hadas in botany has berries on it. And for some strange reason, the Mishnah is very bothered by the existence of these berries. I happen to like berries. I love berries. I'm not a grizzly bear, but you know that a grizzly bear eats on an average day 250,000 bushels worth of berries. A grizzly bear. You don't mess with grizzly bears. But usually if they see people, they run away. So I was in the Rockies in Canada, and we were looking high and low for the grizzlies. We were very disappointed. We wanted our money back. They charged like $80 just to get in there, you know. And we didn't see any grizzlies. So we were on a funicular, actually, in Vancouver, in the Twin Town, you know, the Twin Mountains there. And my wife says, look at a grizzly. So about like 50,000 feet down, we saw a grizzly. So I finally could say I went to Canada and I saw a grizzly bear, you know, not in the Rockies, but at least in Vancouver. Anyway, so the Mishnah paskins, and with this we'll conclude, that hayu anavav merubim the olive, is if you count the olive, the leaves on your hadas, let's say you counted 50 leaves on your hadas, and you counted 51 berries, puzzle. The hadas is completely puzzle. However, the good news at the end, the light at the end of the tunnel is in mi'atan kosher. If you start plucking berries, get yourself a good berry plucker, it's kosher. However, ein mematim b'yontiv. This kind of action cannot be engaged in on yontiv because you're fixing up the hadas. That's called tikkun mana. We can discuss that under a separate. So I was wondering, what's so bad about these anavim? Well, why do we have to get rid of these berries? What's the anti-berry league over here? So the Yerushalmi says that these berries have turned black. As long as they're green berries he says that's considered natural berries and they're part of the hadas and they look exactly like the rest of the hadas. Everything is green. But when they turn black, he says, that's already not considered eitz avot. Eitz avot requires that there be an eitz, right? Yesh bo anovim shchoros, however, is then it becomes something foreign. It becomes a totally foreign element. So make sure that your hadas has no blackberries. Now, Rav Bosa, I have a question to ask you. I'm in a little bit of a bind. I have a certain rabbi who's willing to come down with a bunch of lulavim, a bunch of esrogim, and he's willing to give us shimush, you know, to teach us exactly how to chew. The only problem is he asked me what time to come. So I'm in a bind here. I would make it either at 8:39 or at noon. So I don't know if you could help me, unless I can get two of them. But you know, it gets expensive after a while.
Why wouldn't we do it at 8:30, Rabbi? Why wouldn't we do it at the time of Shia?
You're in favor of 8:30 or not?
Yeah. Why?
Well, no, because I give another Shia. So I don't know. You understand? I don't know.
We're not be instead of Shia one day.
Yeah. Yeah. But he's not going to hang around till a 11:45, so I want those guys also to hear the lecture.
Oh,
you hear the problem? This is what they call triage.
Is this a good example of mutter to shir?
Yeah. Right, how many people are in the other shir?
As many as we have.
It depends, you know, it really fluctuates from day to day, you know. This year is more constant.
What day is
it? 9:00.
Well, he hasn't told me what day he's going to come yet.
Let's make an 9:00 and they can come early for this.
Brian spoke here.
I like the way I like his approach.
Man of compromise.
Okay.
Make it 10:30. Michael, as long as it's not at 10:00.
I'm afraid, Michael, if I make it at 10:30, I'll get nobody here, you know. And I'm talking about Talmud Chacham, you know, bring him down here. He has a tremendous amount of experience. What did he say?
There's another problem. And that is, if you have this year and the other year, we're not fitting here.
Oh, they want to come too. Why not?
No, he's saying there won't be enough room.
Yeah, right, I understand. We'll have to have it out there. For, you know, I'll talk to Rabbi Weiss about that. I'm just wondering if I'm hiring the guy, so I get first dish.
So close to Sukkot, you think everyone would want to hear it. Even those guys.
I don't say no, but I want to, you know. I didn't see Ben today.
No, was he here yesterday?
Yesterday he was here, but only for the first year. Oh wow, something spilled over.
We'll try not to miss the same day together.
Right, because then I think there's a meeting of the call on Kol Bakol. They didn't invite me.
What can we do for it?
Unfortunately, I won't be here tomorrow. No, dark disappointment.
Oh, okay.
Oh, let me hear some towels.
You have any good pictures?
No.
We get some more of these. Here.
Actually, went on a dig one morning. It's very interesting.
Wow, an archaeological dig?
Yeah.
Came to Sarah?
It was outside of Sarah.
Well, that's the truth.
This particular archaeologist is interested in the manufacture of stone vessels. And at what point did the Jews stop doing this? Because they continued after the destruction of the temple. Because they, you know, still had a personal attachment to Haaretz. And so he's like trying to date the latest period when they...
Would they have been allowed to do it? The Romans were in trouble.
He's making stone vessels. I mean, that's... It's not...
Maybe they sold it to the...
Well, no. I mean, stone vessels were only practical because of time. Because they're much harder to make. And they break more easily.
It's an interesting question. Jeff, what I wanted to ask you was, maybe this is less important to you, but what about the swimming
pool? Well, we had a pool at this house, which was good, but we were also hopping a rock to the beach.
Yeah, two choices.
Spectacular.
Yeah, the beach.
Wow. Big waves.
Do they have a lifesaver, or you do?
Yeah. No. I wouldn't take the kids in.
Right. So they enjoy
myself.
Yeah. Well,
yeah. Yeah.
If you have the opportunity to contact Shivti and to ask them if they don't have any more free shirim, because also this week it's the same one, the 12 other ones. So.
Hold on.
I don't know. And it's even not in PDF that it's gonna, like, you could get and have it. It's gonna come here after we're gonna blow the shofar.
She will probably do it.
But it also doesn't seem like a new one, so there's still hope.
Yeah.
Thank you.